The following programming is sponsored by BFG LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. Welcome to Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. My name is Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers, the host of Conversation Unplugged. I got my brother in Christ, Pastor Robert Johnson, co-host, waiting for Bishop Aiken, but don't see him as of yet. Hey, Pastor Johnson, what's going on? I think you're smiling today. What's your team? Your team undefeated, right?
3-0.
Yeah, 3-0. Yeah, he just gave a kappa symbol, but you are alpha. But we'll talk about that later. Yo, man, y'all got a tough team this year. I have to give y'all credit. Y'all not tougher than the Eagles, but y'all got a tough team this year, man.
What's your record?
Huh?
What's your record?
You ain't play nobody. 3-0. 3-0.
Yeah. Y'all ain't 3-0. Oh, y'all almost 0-3.
Here we go again. Let's unplug this hateration, man. No, man, I'm glad to have you as a show host, you know, co-host and everything. Definitely glad to have you as a brother in Christ. Listen, y'all, on a serious note, before we get into the subject today, this upcoming election, every election is an important election. This isn't a time to sit on the sideline. This is a time to get actively involved. If you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. If you are looking to do your mail-in ballots, you know, register to get your mail-in ballots. Participate in democracy. You know, many countries and continents don't have the opportunity to participate in a democratic election. We have an opportunity to do so. A vote for no one is a vote for someone. I don't let nobody, shop and choose my clothes. I don't let nobody choose the type of groceries I want to buy. And I definitely will not let anybody choose the president of the United States of America for me, as well as Congress and Senate. And in the local elections, I choose to do that. I choose to make the selection, and don't believe the myth and a lie that voting doesn't matter. If voting didn't matter, they wouldn't be trying to take your right to vote away from you. Dr. Aiken, Bishop Aiken, man. Bishop Dr. Aiken, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing all right. I'm blessed, and I am still alive and doing well.
That's great. We'll get you to do a shout out on the best barbecue in the city of Philadelphia after our 15-minute station break, all right? So we good to go. Listen, after our last show last week, we want to get into the subject. After our last show last week, I got a text message from my daughter, and I got another text from her today. She provides me with stories that's not hitting the airways, if that makes any sense. And so the story that she hit me with, and the other one she just hit me with, is deep. And that's my youngest daughter. Let me clarify. My youngest daughter, Kayla Weathers. Both of my daughters are in Atlanta, Georgia. And I get hit with this story about Marcellus Williams. And I started to do some investigation on Marcellus Williams. And after I'm doing the investigation, I'm saying to myself, something's not right here. And so I want to start off with our viewers and listeners to share Marcellus' story, his narrative. On Tuesday night in the state of Missouri, this was reported by the BBC, on Tuesday night by the state of Missouri, Marcellus Williams was executed, faced the death sentence. He received the death sentence he spent more than two decades on death row. Williams, who had two previous execution stays, maintained he was innocent in the 1998 fatal stabbing of Felicia Gale in St. Louis, a suburb, and a wide swath of people had opposed his death sentence. An attorney representing Williams argued there was racial discrimination in selecting jurors and that the DNA evidence in this case was mishandled. Williams was denied a last-minute reprieve from the United States court after Missouri's top court and governor rejected his clemency request early that week. In a rare move, three liberal justices, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson said on Thursday they disagreed with the conservative majority and would have granted a stay. They did not give a reason. Missouri Governor of Corrections Communication Director Karen Poljman said no witness for Miss Gale's family attended the execution, CBS, the BBC, and U.S. partners reported. Williams' son and two of his attorneys were present. The title of this today subject that we're going to unplug is The Execution of Marcellus Williams, Just or Unjust. Talk to me, Bishop. Talk to me, Pastor Johnson, whichever one of you want to go first. Before, getting my email and stuff, did you hear about the case? And what is your thoughts about his execution? Who wants to go first?
I can go first. I think one of the things about it is that when you deal with this subject of death row or death penalty, mm-hmm. we do know, and even from research, I can recall doing a research paper on death row inmates in Texas and all that kind of stuff, and realize since the 70s, I know that there have been multiple cases that was innocence projects and all that kind of stuff that was happening going on, and that you have well over I forgot the number, I think it's right. 90 or something, maybe more than that, people that are innocent. I think the factors is around 200 or something that's innocent or was proven mm-hmm. innocent, that's off of death row and have been part of the innocence project that they found exonerated or what have you. The one thing that the answer to your question is no, I did not hear about this.
Right.
This was something that was new, wasn't in the news. As far as I'm concerned, I did not see it in the news or what have you. But when you right. sent it, was like, oh, wow. But the case is alarming. And it has some revisionist history when it comes to, looking at stories mm-hmm. and stories thinking they can be revised. But to be honest with you, it doesn't look like a revised story. It looks like a story that, has some tones and tenor of some other stories.
Right.
We can go on and on, but it has some... just some factors in there that raise a red flag and say, hey, wait, what's going on with this? And as I was reading and kind of taking it in, understanding, I realized, of course, there were some things, of course, from my perspective that I would have questions of. Mm-hmm. But you're still dealing with a white and black scenario. You're still dealing with that. There are still things that you have. When it comes to the actual case itself, that seemed to be in question from not my perspective, but from what I read.
Right.
There were still some things that was left in question before he actually was executed.
Right.
So without me kind of having more to say, I'm going to pass the microphone to my brother.
Don't talk to him. He's bragging about his team. It's 3-0. Let's go on a commercial break. No, pass the mic. Pass the mic, man. Pass the mic.
I did hear about it. I heard about it when the first inkling came out that there was DNA evidence.
That's what we're going to talk about. Yes.
That was not his.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
And I heard about it when there was persons from the Innocent Project and the district attorney's office.
Okay.
Well, we both said that this deserves a second look. And I heard about it. And I'm thinking that as so many times that we have in America, when there is a doubt, we hold things up to make sure that there is no innocent person ever being put to death for a crime that they did not forget.
That's right.
However, I also looked at the fact that we're in a strange political climate. And by no means, even though his life has ended, by no means is the fight done.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they can really prove that he was innocent and that the state executed an innocent person, then that is something that will throw the debate around the death penalty up in front and center again.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we're in a strange political climate. So we must understand that he was a political victim, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Climate of folk being tough on crime. And if you look at everything that's going on in our society right now, the governor wouldn't do it.
Right.
The governor wouldn't. The state Supreme Court wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
They should have known that at that point that there was no way that the United States Supreme Court would do it at all.
Right.
So we have to deal with the politics of what this means for us and our community and also the criminal justice system as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that they would do what they always do, that they would just pump the brakes, do the investigation, and then come up with whatever it was that they have found out that was true or untrue.
So to put somebody in a judicial system who has done wrong, and I'm not an advocate of death row, but to put somebody in a judicial system who has done wrong that has to pay the price for their crime, right? There's no argument there. But to put somebody in a judicial system where evidence shows that there was some problems with the evidence that was lodged against him, right? And then even right here that I'm reading in the BBC, it says they also said there was no forensic evidence linking Williams to the crime scene and that the murder weapon had been mishandled, raising questions over DNA evidence. So the part that I wrestle with, and I know I titled it The Execution of Marcellus Williams, Just or Unjust, is I'm not here to create a case that it was justified. There's really no justification, but there may be those who may have a different opinion than myself. But to read the evidence here, and it says that, you know, there was no forensic evidence linking Williams to the crime scene and that the murder weapon had been mishandled. So I have trouble resonating with the fact that here it is, an African-American around our age, right? An African-American was put to death who was on death row for a crime that he said he was innocent. There's no forensic evidence, and that the DNA that was on the weapon that was corrupted because it was mishandled. There's no way, I'm not a lawyer, but from the outside looking in, there's no way that this man should have faced execution on Tuesday. It's a sin and a shame. It's a sin and a shame. So that also says that our lives don't matter, right? Our lives don't matter. When you catch us, when you get us into a correctional system, right, it's better to go ahead and dispose of us because you look at our life that doesn't have any value. For take an early station break, here's my thoughts. I really want to unplug. What's the reason for continuing to execute someone without thoroughly investigating more whether or not that the person was innocent? Is it that you just felt and convicted that the person was guilty? Is that an option? Number two, is it the fact that you didn't want to admit to the fact that someone is committed for, excuse me, that was committed for, not committed, that was convicted for a crime that the person committed? Were you too embarrassed to say that you were wrong? Or are you afraid that once you admit that this person is innocent of a crime that he committed, now you got a multi-million-dollar lawsuit that you got to pay to this person for falsely incarcerating, putting on death row, and now that person is released? All of this comes to mind when his execution took place on Tuesday. Let's follow up with those particular scenarios as we take a 30-second station break on Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. Let's take a 30-second station break at this time.
Dr. Wayne M. Weathers, not only am I the radio show host of Conversation Unplugged, but I'm also a life coach with BFG LLC. BFG means Bound for Greatness. As a life coach, what I do is I coach people to the goals and objectives that they would like to obtain. Whether you're a business entrepreneur, whether you're just trying to figure out certain things in life, utilize my services. Give me a call, 484-324-8397. Let's have a consultation so I can be your life coach so that you can achieve greatness that you're bound to get. Take care.
Welcome back to Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. I don't know about you, Pastor Johnson, but right now, after the show is over with, I got a taste of some barbecue, and I just really need to know where to go get me some good barbecue. You feel the same way, Pastor Johnson?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, man. Mouth was watering for some barbecue. You know what? I don't know about you. I can't tell myself where to get some barbecue in Philadelphia. And I know you're from Philadelphia, but let's go to the subject matter expert here, Bishop Dr. Kevin Akin, who's the subject matter expert in the area of barbecue. So after this radio show, you can be able to tell us where to go get some good barbecue. Where can we go get some good barbecue?
I do have an announcement to make, and I think this is a good announcement in reference to that. We shut down our present location to move in another location closer to North Philly. So if you go by 52nd and Locust Street Barbecue and you see that we're not there, that's because we're moving. Okay. So it is very, very exciting. Time to be in a place of advancement and a place that you can be moving around the city to spread the fact that we want to be in somebody's home and make sure that we're at somebody's table and to make sure they get some good barbecue. We specialize, of course, in the Bishop's ribs, and that's the dry ribs with no sauce. Because good ribs don't need sauce. But the barbecue spot at 52nd and Logan Street that we had, we're excited about just the movement that we have gotten, the action we have gotten, of course, and the impact we've gotten. And so we'll be moving. You'll be hearing more of that. So continue to fast right now. And as you're fasting, we'll come back with more about the barbecue.
For the mere fact that I got to fast makes me even more excited to go to your new location, get me some barbecue. You got me? So I won't get no barbecue from the from the best barbecue in Philadelphia right now. That's The minute that you open, then I can be able just to run like Randy Fork and go get some barbecue. You got me? Yeah. Let's get back here. What's very interesting here about the execution of Marcellus Williams, the trial prosecutor said, check this out, reported by the BBC, he followed procedures at the time by touching the murder weapon without gloves after it was treated in a crime lab. So the weapon that was used to murder this woman, the trial prosecutor said he touched it. He touched the murder weapon without gloves after it was tested in a crime lab. Recently, top prosecutors in St. Louis joined Williams' attorney, check this out, in asking for the conviction to be overturned. So the top prosecutors in St. Louis asked for the conviction to be overturned after a new testimony from 2001 trial prosecutors and recent DNA testing showed that the evidence was contaminated. The case highlighted issues of potentially putting an innocent person to death and an inherent risk of capital punishment. At least 200 people sentenced to death row in 1973 were later exonerated, including four in Missouri, according to the Death Penalty Information Center. So here it is, the prosecutors in St. Louis that prosecuted him in 98, he was convicted, excuse me, the murder happened in 98. I think he was prosecuted and convicted in 2001. Top prosecutors in St. Louis basically wanted to, let me get this right, was asking for the conviction to be overturned. But then it was fought by the attorney general, went up to the state court in Missouri, and then turned down by the Supreme Court. How in the world, help me out, Bishop, Pastor Johnson and Bishop Akins, Bishop Dr. Akins, how in the world, if the top prosecutors wanted to overturn the conviction, why in the world would the state attorney general, state Supreme Court, and as well as the Supreme Court of the United States of America choose to have this person executed?
Because it was late. You know, you touched it when you touched it. It should have been brought up at the time of trial. At the time of the trial, they should have brought it up then. Before he even went to a jury, they should have said that the evidence was tainted and that the mistrial should have happened. And if they wanted to retry him, they could have. But see, they want to hit with the prosecution anyway. And when they want to hit with the prosecution, then we get to the point where now it's the 11th hour and they want to come up with all these excuses as to now let's overturn it. It should have never went to trial in 2001 if the evidence had been tainted. But however, I don't know all the evidence that they had around the trial. I mean, the murder weapon was just one aspect of the trial. I don't know if he was innocent or guilty, but I know he didn't get a fair shake as far as it's concerned of getting a second trial. And if the murder weapon was thrown out, being contaminated, and he couldn't put the murder weapon in his hand, then that would have been something totally different. But you do not come at the 11th hour and say, hey, it was tainted in 2001. Why are you coming to 2024 at the last minute saying, hey, let's stop this, let's stop. You had all those years to get him off of death row, but they didn't want to admit to their faux pas.
Question is, why isn't that they don't want to admit to it? It's not really, you can't answer that because you're not a subject matter expert in Missouri, anything like that. And you're not advocating for me, that's just a hypothetical. Why is it that they don't want to admit to their mistakes?
Because they need convictions. convictions, we want to be tough on crime. We want to make sure that we get justice to the victims.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time what happens is the people who want justice are the people that they convict who become victims themselves, mm-hmm, of an unjust justice system.
Mm-hmm.
And in Missouri, they want to be tough on crime.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, who knows? I don't know. But who knows what other political aspirations this person might have had in getting this conviction.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to weigh that. We have to weigh it. And I don't know, like I said, I don't know all of the evidence, but this one thing deserved a second look, something to stop it, to be sure. Because we know, and Bishop Akin, you know as well, that we have had people who have been found guilty by a jury of their peers, and I use the word peers in air quotes, only to find out that they had the wrong person.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So true. Your thoughts, Bishop?
Yeah, my thoughts really goes back, you know, to your question. We know that we're in a place where justice is supposed to prevail, that you're innocent until proven guilty. Mm-hmm. That's something that is known, something that's always looked at when you deal with the justice system, put them before the jury of their peers, and, you know, we'll try them that way.
Right.
Innocent until proven guilty. And our audience knows, of course, any idea of trials and how they go.
Pass the microphone to
my brother. Know it is, the evidence is put forth, and of course, you know, lawyers go back and forth, and, you know, you have a prosecutor, you have defense and all that kind of stuff. Now, but guilty until proven innocent seems to be the mode or the method that we see.
Mm-hmm.
That you're guilty until proven innocent. And then the innocence that we're looking for, we already made up a mind that if we, you know, you can't show us anything, then you're already guilty. And I think that in this point, in this place, in this time, based on this situation, that we do see it working out that way, you know,
mm-hmm.
guilty and had to prove his innocence instead of the reverse, innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
So to me, I feel as though that the minds were made up. They wanted to prove the fact that he was guilty and not innocent. And the mindsets that come into the atmosphere when it deals with justice is that point that you are guilty until proven innocent. And we find it time after time. But I'm also going to segue also to another thought. Just in the crackdown of crime in that area of Missouri and any other places that they have, that where the death penalty, of course, is put in place. We realize that he had a couple stays that occurred over the period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Those things, of course, is historic. It's evidence. It's there. This is where the importance to look at statistical data does not support or suggest that the death penalty itself has hampered or has caused crime to stop.
Mm-hmm.
It's not proven. Back to say, do we continue to institute the death penalty and what proof it is of that? And so when we crack down on this, what does it do? What's the impact? Did crime go down? Did it go up? What have you? And data does not support that. It does not support that the death penalty supports that crime has decreased.
Right.
And because of that, there should be more times based on the Innocent Project and more areas of looking at to say that before they go and before they believe that justice prevail, they really need to dot I's and cross T's.
Mm-hmm.
Have here that evidence were hampered. Pastor Johnson kind of mentioned about it was the 11th hour. And I'm going to play on those words a little bit. And if it's the 11th hour, 12 o'clock to 12:01 is when the death penalty would be administered.
Mm-hmm.
If it is the 11th hour, we have to let our justice know, those that have the authority for the justice system, that they have till 12 o'clock. Stop executing people in the 11th hour.
Mm-hmm.
When the time is needed for the stay.
Right. So let's do this, right? In all fairness, let me give some evidence and then let's go on a station break. So the Missouri Attorney General basically said that the new DNA findings released last month don't exonerate Williams. In addition to one of the defendant's own expert previous testified, he could not rule out the possibility that Williams' DNA was on the knife. He could only testify to the fact that enough actors had handled the knife throughout the legal process that other DNA was present. So let me stop right there. If his DNA is on that knife, but other people's DNA is on that knife, then you cannot conclusively say that it's clear that that was the murder weapon that was used. That's first thing. But here's the other thing that the Attorney General says. He says other evidence helped convict Williams remains intact. The victim's personal items were found in Williams' car after the murder. A witness testified that Williams had sold the victim's laptop to him. Williams confessed to his girlfriend and an inmate, allegedly, in the St. Louis jail, and Williams' girlfriend saw him dispose of the bloody clothes worn during the murder, the Attorney General office said. Williams' attorney had asked the U.S. Supreme Court to stay the execution, citing newly discovered evidence from the trial prosecutor's testimony last month. And so all that being said, right, can't conclusively say that his hands was on a murder weapon. The NAACP calls the execution of Marcellus Williams a lynching. Was it a lynching? Was this execution a lynching? Why or why not? That's the question I'm going to lead with before we go on our station break. Was this execution a lynching? Why or why not? Let's take our 30-second station break on WWDB 860 AM in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection and the 2-1 Eagles. And then let's come back and talk about whether or not this execution was a lynching, according to one of the state chapters of the NAACP. 30-second station break at this time.
Hi, this is Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers. Not only am I the radio show host of Conversation Unplugged, but I'm also a life coach with BFG LLC. BFG means Bound for Greatness. As a life coach, what I do is I coach people to the goals and objectives that they would like to obtain. Whether you're a business entrepreneur, whether you're just trying to figure out certain things in life, utilize my services. Give me a call, 484-324-8397. Let's have a consultation so I could be your life coach so that you can achieve greatness that you're bound to get. Take care.
Hey, we're back on Conversation Unplugged, WWDB 860 AM. I want to send this shout out in the next 15 minutes. Next 30 seconds of the hour. I definitely want Pastor Johnson to announce any initiatives that's going on in his church, Messiah, and his podcast and things of that nature. But I got to give a shout out. Let me tell you what something special is going on, and I'm needing your support on this, right? 10 years ago, November 30th, 2014, 10 years ago, a vision was enacted, and it came to light, and a church was born in Philadelphia that moved to Jenkintown. And that church is Vision of Hope Baptist Church, where I'm the organizer and the pastor. 10 years ago, it's hard to believe, Pastor Johnson, Bishop Bacon's, 10 years ago that this vision came to life. And we got a major celebration on December the 7th at 10:30 a.m. at Drexelbrook, where we're celebrating our 10th year anniversary, And our ticket price is $65. We could charge more, but we want to keep it at $65. I'm asking you to come out and support us. $65, you can contact me or contact the church and purchase your ticket. Now, can't do a layaway, a dollar a day for the next 65 days to get your ticket. Amen. Amen. Let the church say amen. But come on out and celebrate 10 years of, it's not just a name, it's a Christ-centered lifestyle. 10 years of us laboring in the vineyard. 10 years. And contact us because we would love for you to purchase an ad in our booklet as well. Pastor Johnson, I hope you're able to purchase the ticket. Pastor Bishop Bacon, I noticed you said you was going to purchase the ticket. I think you said y'all was going to get a table also, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, so we look forward to your celebrating with us. It was at Pastor Johnson, I don't know if you're aware of this, but it was at Bishop Bacon's church that we when we put the first bid in, and then we wanted to have to negotiate, put another bid in, you know, at a higher price, it was at Bishop Bacon's church that we met. And we took that leap of faith and said, this is the direction where we're going. So Vision of Hope Baptist Church, I am the pastor and organizer. It's not just a name, it's a Christ-centered lifestyle. Join us, right, on December the 7th at Drexelbrook, where the guest preacher will be Pastor Clement Lupton of Beloved St. John Evangelistic Church. And then we're celebrating on the 8th at our church, where our guest preacher will be Pastor Rich White out of the Pittsburgh area. So, hey, we'll have more information about that. If you hear some noise in the background, I'm broadcasting from home, so a neighbor's getting his lawn cut, and I need to find another room to go do my broadcast. All right? Yeah. Get some headphones. Yeah, that's what I need. So let's get back. Lynching. Was this a high-tech lynching? What's your thoughts? Who'd like to take that on?
You know, I'll take it because it's a good question. I think we that's something that we probably can't answer.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. It does have some characteristics, in a sense, of lynching. And for those of you that are listening that do not know what lynching is, it's a public killing or murder or killing, I would say, where a mob would come and they would take someone, and they would do it in a public format. And so it was usually done in the past. So this here, again, we cannot say either or what it was is a lynching, but it does bring about some historical factors that one has gone through, mm-hmm. you know, when it comes to what we've viewed and what we understand. It's definitely history of lynching and definitely in America.
Mm-hmm.
We do have that.
I would be very, very, very careful. Sometimes we can use language
mm-hmm.
that is very incendiary,
mm-hmm.
only to find out that we don't know all of the information when it comes to the certain situation. Remember that there was a man by the name of Clarence Thomas who used the word lynching.
High-tech lynching, doing his confirmation hearings with Anita Hill.
A high-tech lynching of an uppity black. That's what he said. And we got to be very careful.
Mm-hmm.
Because I support the NAACP. As I listened to you and I read a little bit, there was more to this than just the knife. And he had two other stays. I'm reading it. He had two other stays. And if it was true that it was more than just a knife, and the weight of the evidence was that he was more guilty than he was not guilty, the issue is not whether or not he was guilty or not. The issue for us should be, is the death penalty still needed in the midst of this day and time?
Mm-hmm.
Where we are.
Mm-hmm.
Are we still, as Bishop Aiken said, it has been proven time and time again that the death penalty is not a deterrent to crime. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. It makes me mm-hmm. feel good because an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But you know what that you know what that means, that an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth leaves everybody blind and toothless.
mm-hmm.
It doesn't do anything to further the cause of justice.
Yeah.
And I think that it was not a lynching as far as the fact was A, was the trial fair, B, was the evidence stacked. C, there's mm-hmm. so much to this that we have to unpack, because I got news for you. And I'm gonna say this: whether he is black or white, any unjust execution in America, anyone being is a travesty. And that means for us to take pause. Remember, we're just dealing with the fact that if it was not for Barack Obama, bringing up the fact that he had to pardon the little boy named Stinney all those years ago,
mm-hmm.
who was lynched, amen, by a system who executed him at what is it, 13, 14? He got, you know. And so the issue is that we got to be very careful when we got to look at all of the facts and say, listen, was this a just verdict?
Just verdict.
But was the means necessary?
Hmm. Wow. So here's what else is interesting here. Another article I picked up, it said, the St. Louis Prosecuting Attorney's Office said it reached an agreement with Williams last month under the consent judgment approved by the court in Gail's family. That's the woman who was murdered. Her family agreed to the following: Williams would enter an Alfred plea of guilty to first degree murder and be resentenced to life in prison. The families basically supported the life in prison, but the state attorney general office opposed the deal and appealed it to the Supreme Court, which blocked the agreement. Williams' team filed a clemency petition to the United States Supreme Court last week, noting that Missouri's previous governor had postponed Williams' execution indefinitely amid questions about the integrity of Williams' trial. Former Governor Eric Grittens previously halted Williams' execution and formed the board to investigate his case and determine whether he should be granted clemency. The board investigated Williams' case for the next 6 years until Governor Michael Parson abruptly terminated the process. Williams attorney's room. The family didn't want, no, didn't say want, just say the family approved of a life sentence and not an execution. What are your thoughts about that?
Elections matter.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be very, very mindful of who we're putting in down ballot.
Yep.
Attorney generals, governors, mayors, whoever. We have to be very mindful of who we're putting in down ballot. Because the issue is that the fact that the family, the victim's family agrees, usually courts and prosecutors and attorney generals will give deference to the victim's family mm-hmm. as they are the grieved party.
Mm-hmm.
This has nothing to do with the agreement. This has everything to do about the attorney general's stance to be tough on crime
mm-hmm.
in a politically charged climate.
Mm-hmm.
So we and now more than ever in 2024.
Yeah.
With all that's going on now, even in Springfield,
mm-hmm.
we have to understand that words and elections matter.
Mm. We got to highlight that words and elections matter. Your thought, Bishop?
There's a bunch of thoughts in a sense that's happening centered around justice, centered around the Innocence Project
mm-hmm.
and the effect of what's effective, what's ineffective in that regard, who's actually the ones who are feeling as if they become again the true judge and jury over somebody's life.
Right.
This has been taken in a sense of, for me, I didn't know about it. That's number one. I was, probably in a cloud. However, when I did get the information, everything that surrounds this in our discussion, what side the family's on or not,
mm-hmm.
What side the officials that we do elect and, or not, and those things. It still falls to the point of what I mentioned earlier when it comes to the data of support about executions.
Mm-hmm.
This whole conversation, really, this should be in a kind of another format. What's moral and what's immoral?
Mm.
I'm gonna go into this and we can pretty much kind of unravel this onion. Find out the means of execution and, when somebody is executed. And I know right now, based on the question you asked, but these are the thoughts that are scrambled in my mind and I've been processing since I got the information from you. When you're dealing with the death penalty, And I can say this to our listeners here. The one area when it comes to death penalties that I really, really, really attest to is, of course, that movie called The Green Mile
mm-hmm.
That left an indelible impression of innocence in the Innocence Project and whatever. And I know that was fictitious in that regard or what have you. But it had some real life tenets in that there was a murder that happened and they blamed the wrong person.
Right.
And we see it so many countless times. And again, in this, we cannot say if it's a lynching or not. We cannot say who's innocent, who's guilty. The key is that the death penalty was exercised.
That's right.
That's the conversation and the support. Is the death penalty relevant?
Mm.
Well, no, the death penalty is not relevant because I got news for you. And I'm going to put it out there. But those who want to be pro-life can't be pro-death penalty.
I was great to go there after station break, but let's go there. Let's roll there. Let's roll there.
You can't be pro-life. You can't be pro-life and then be pro-death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot get a child to be born into the world and force a woman to have a child. And then when the child messes up, you want to put that child to death by lethal injection. And so you can't be pro-life on the one hand and tough on crime and with the death penalty on the other hand. The two do not mix.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you're pro-life, you have to be nixing the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say that it doesn't make sense. It does not make sense for governors who are pro-life to not want to give clemency and wipe off the rolls those people sitting on death row, because I am pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you 3 life terms.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I can let you die in prison, shock you, bring you back to life so you can serve the rest of your term. But what I cannot do is to force a woman to choose or take away her choice. But yet and still, after I forced you to have this child, and Lord forbid this child does something heinous where they're convicted of a crime and then put the same child to death in the death chamber.
Johnson, you rolled with this, and so let's bypass this, the 30-second station break, because you hit on something, right?
So
just a quick pause. Any announcements you have with Messiah United Methodist Church, any events you have coming up, then we're going to roll within the last few minutes of our broadcast.
This Saturday, we are having our health fair. Our health fair is from 10 to 4 right on the campus of the beautiful Messiah United Methodist Church, 527 Ridge Pike, right in the heart of Lafayette Hill. We invite you to come out, get your blood pressure checked, go ahead and get the free screenings that we have, and also bring your kids because we got something good for them. So bring them on down, have some good fun with us. There'll be some good food, some good fun, and some information. And do me a favor. This is September. This is Allstate Prostate Cancer Awareness Month.
Good.
And we want all of our brothers, all of our fathers, all of our sisters, I mean, all of our uncles, whoever, to just go and get your prostate checked. It's a beatable disease. It's something that we can win from. And it's far too many of us who are dying because we fear the finger. Don't fear the finger. Get your prostate checked so you can be here for your family.
And Johnson, that's something we should talk, you know, either set up on our new podcast series that we get ready to do. And I'll announce that next week, or on Conversation Unplugged. My dad's a prostate cancer survivor. So was my grandfather and a few family members that are as well. So that's a good.
You know, that's what my wife does.
So does Benita. That's where my wife, that's where they met during the prostate cancer projects. Yeah. So going back here, you said something pro-life, pro-death, you know. So here's the deal. I've always took this stance that evangelicals are not pro-life. They're pro-birth. Because life is from the womb to the tomb, bottom line. But still, even if you're pro-birth, you can't be pro-death at the same time. You can't be an advocate that the fetus should be born, but not an advocate that someone who commits a heinous crime should die or face death. And I like that. You says, I am pro-life. I'm pro-life to the point that if you commit a crime, that I'm pro-life, life sentences, you know? And I like that. So if you're pro-life, yeah, I'm pro-life all the way to the point you commit a crime, I'm pro-life that you get life sentence. You got me? Not light sentence, life sentence. What do we tell our parishioners? How do we address this? Because this story flew under the radar. It did not get the major national attention that it received. I had my youngest daughter not sent it to me, Kayla Nichelle Weathers. I may not have paid much attention to it. I think my wife sent me something also. So if it's a combination of my wife and my daughter, if they didn't send me this information, I would have never known anything. How do we shed light on this injustice? Pastor, Reverend Dr. Aiken, Bishop Dr. Aiken, and then Pastor Johnson. Sorry for the stuttering.
How do we shed light on this? I think education is always important.
Mm-hmm.
That's a number one. Even when the conversation comes about the idea of understanding where we are in society,
mm-hmm.
that's education. The idea of knowing what is our historical backgrounds and what you know, as education. And like my brother mentioned, Pastor Johnson mentioned about, you know, it's neither white nor black. It's not a color. It's not dealing with color or race or what have you. It's the issue of the death penalty itself. That's the conversation. Mm-hmm. But I am a stickler to not speaking in ignorance. Mm-hmm. The information is so much information out there for you to glean and to rally some understanding. It's very, very important to do that. And so when you're there to make judgment calls,
right,
make sure that you have the facts. That becomes important. Make sure you're looking at everything that happened. And this conversation is generalizable. It is something that I'm saying, for it doesn't matter if you're a lawyer, a judge, a prosecutor, you know, whatever it is, a law official. Information and facts are important. Mm-hmm. Cannot ignore those things. And again, here is something that becomes very, very important to note. Any doubt that's in the minds of individuals that are in the justice system, mm-hmm. if there are any doubt, mm-hmm. at that point, you have to answer the question, are they innocent or are they guilty?
Wow. Pastor Johnson, I think we got 4 minutes left.
I think the courageous conversations are around not guilt and innocence, but our Christian and moral compass. Could you and I sit on a jury where we would have to decide the life or death of a human being sitting at the defense chair? Could you and I make the decision to sentence someone to death, mm-hmm. knowing that our decision could send a potentially innocent person to the death chamber?
Right.
Well, how do we sleep at night? Mm-hmm. And the other thing is also the validation of, is our just system really just? Justice system really just? Mm-hmm. So many times, those who have public defenders, they find that the deck is stacked against them because of the limited resources that they have versus mm-hmm. the prosecuting office has. And is it going to be something where we do look at sometimes the color of the skin of the victim and the color of the skin of the alleged perpetrator? And does that tilt the scales either way? Mm-hmm. And so it becomes an overhaul of the justice system and understanding that everybody who sits in the defense chair is not always guilty.
That's right. Of the crime.
Yeah. And that is the problem. It could be you, it could be me, it could be anybody who's accused. Only to say 20 years later, when we're strapped to the gurney, and then once that happens, oops, doesn't matter.
So getting ready to close out, there's one important part I want to share with us talking about this conversation that I don't think anybody picked up on. How can I put this in the brief time period that I have? It should not matter what your theology and what your faith is when it comes to defending justice. Here you have three African-American men who are pastors and who are Christians, and talking about the justice of our brother who was Islamic. He practiced Islam, who was, I believe, unjustly put to death. And here it is, you got people of faith that's advocating the wrongness of putting this brother to death, who happens to share a different theology than ours. The beauty of this conversation, as we get ready to wrap up, the beauty of this conversation is you can disagree with someone and not be considered hateful of that person's ideology or that person's theology. You can disagree with their concept of their religious beliefs like that. I say disagree. I may not believe what you believe, but when it comes to justice, what you believe doesn't even matter. If it's wrong, it's wrong. And we have to speak on the rightness or bring order to disorder or speak right when wrong is committed. And this was a Muslim brother who I firmly believe was unjustly taken out of this world. I firmly believe that. And we must take out of this congregation conversation back to our congregation, regardless of race and ethnicity. The church has to be the prophetic voice that speaks for justice in an unjust world. And as long as we keep our mouths shut on the injustices that take place, we become irrelevant. We become a relic and irrelevant to the community God called us to serve. So thank you for listening to Conversation Unplugged, being ending just about a minute early. Thank you for listening to Conversation Unplugged, to my brothers in Christ, Bishop Dr. Kevin Akin, to Pastor Robert Johnson, 3-0 Minnesota Vikings. I won't hate on them today, because if I hate on them today, they'll get blessed tomorrow, so I'll just recognize them grudgingly. But anyway, to the Minnesota Vikings, 3-0 and everything. I enjoy hosting the show with the both of you. Thank you for WWDB 860 AM for allowing us to do what others will not do, provide an informative, have an informative radio show that educates, transforms, and inspires community for the greater good. So thank you for listening to Conversation Unplugged. God put breath in our body. Next week, we'll be back next Thursday, Unplugging Conversations. Take care. God bless. May heaven continue to smile upon you. And thank you for listening to Conversation Unplugged. Take care. Love.